It's 11:06. You're listening to City Lights on 90.1 WABE Atlanta. I'm Lois Reitzes. Later in the hour, we kick off our month-long celebration of the man who put Atlanta classical music on the map, on the world map, Robert Shaw. April 30th marks Shaw's centenary. 2,500 years ago, Plato stated that music is a more potent instrument than any other for education. Music instruction has been a vital force in American education since colonial times. Today, we're checking in on the state of music education in our schools. In the studio, we have WABE contributor Scott Stewart and special guest William Pitts, a composer who also teaches at Pace Academy. Welcome, Scott and Will.
Good morning, Lois.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Well, we've heard all too many stories about school systems cutting funding in the arts, particularly music education. What is the counter argument? Why should music be mandated in pre-K through 12 curricula?
I think it's a great starting point. I think a lot of us, though, were in band, orchestra, and choir in junior high and high school, had lots of performances, maybe parades and basketball games and lots of rehearsals, and maybe never really got the fundamental message that many music educators feel is the takeaway from a great music education, and that is the development of what we call aesthetic sensitivity. And that's the ability to perceive the elements of a work of art and how those elements are manipulated by composers to form something that is meaningful and emotional and spiritually whole. Essentially, the fundamental education of human creativity, the thing that makes us different from other mammals. And that's what you'll often hear as called music for music's sake. So I think this is maybe the most impactful course of education that you can take in your entire pre-K through 12, maybe even college experience. You learn about yourself, your emotions, your spirit, your creativity, and how to get what's inside you out.
Will, you have a lot of experience here.
Well, and I think a lot of students find that a musical part of their day is a different part of their brain that they get to use compared to what they're using in their other classes. And then when you look beyond the K through 12 education towards college and technical school majors and curriculum, students in this day are required to make pretty specific decisions about their path and their course of study. And so I think K through 12 education systems should be focused on providing as many opportunities as possible for students to explore and try new things, try things in the arts, try things out of their educational comfort zone, if you will. And I also think the biggest point is creative performance and improvisational activities give students numerous opportunities to develop a sense of self-confidence, both through being successful in an art, but also through trying something and failing. I don't think we give enough students an opportunity to try something and not be so good at it and to learn from that failure. And so I think the creative opportunities you get in music classes and arts classes in general provide a pretty great opportunity there.
Well, interesting you talk about trying and failing. A few weeks ago, we had Henry Winkler in, and, you know, he's this wonderful comic actor who's had tremendous success, and he now co-authors a series of books aimed at children with dyslexia. Mm-hmm. He was severely dyslexic and just performed miserably in school as a child, all the way through high school. He was in the bottom 3% of his class, called stupid, slow. He always countered it with humor, but he said he had a music teacher in high school who told him, once you get out of here, meaning high school, you will succeed. And I think the music teacher was aware that Henry was just wired differently, really was very bright and, in fact, gifted. But, you know, if you don't have music ed, what happens?
That's right. And I think there are a lot of students that over the course of their formative education become very risk averse. They don't raise their hand if they think they're going to have the wrong answer. And so much of the end of the rainbow for at least high school education is testing, right? So this is not a very popular justification for policymakers if you can't test it and if you can't give a set of statistics from a certain school or a certain school district that's some kind of benchmark of educational success. There's no AP test in cello or in Play-Doh or in Lego or in creativity. It's all about very kind of compartmentalized educational disciplines. It's not quite as sexy as sports rankings or as scores. Nonetheless, this is really why we teach music. It's the fundamental philosophical basis for the inclusion of music in the schools is to try to get students to be themselves and to express who they are.
Well, you've mentioned artistic and creative skills that are part and parcel of a music education. Are there other aspects of music participation in schools that benefit students?
Well, I think advocacy for music is somewhat twofold. We as music lovers and musicians often justify music education simply because of how much we love it or what it has meant to us. But I think the other end is we have to find ways and build bridges as to how what we're teaching in music classrooms benefits and develops students in ways that also helps them in their academic classrooms. For example, at Pace, over 80% of students participate in art of some kind. And so for me as a music teacher, to not find a justification that also supports their academic and social development kind of misses an opportunity to connect with my colleagues that are teaching math and history and science.
Mm-hmm. I agree. This makes music not just its own little thing off to the side. Very often it's perceived as a class for those who can do it and that it's not really for the rest of the population. Mm-hmm. But in fact, music can be for everyone. And in fact, I would argue should be for everyone. And there are many studies that are starting to come out of different areas of academic disciplines that are supporting the idea that students who participate in formal music education have higher academic achievement, and that sometimes that means test scores, than those who do not have a formal music education. There's a recent study from the University of California that found that music trains the brain for higher forms of thinking as the prefrontal cortex is forming. They looked at second graders who were given music lessons, and they scored 27% higher on proportional math and fractions tests than children who did not receive the same instruction. And there are lots of different studies to look at. You have to be careful, of course, and look at the population and not use blanket generalizations about, you know, music will just make you smarter. I don't think that's a really good approach. But there is a growing body of evidence to suggest that music learning enhances skills in language, in reasoning, in memorization, in physical coordination and critical listening, and so many others. Mm-hmm. There's another great 10-year study that tracked 25,000 middle and high school students.
That is a huge sample.
That's a pretty
big
sample.
Over 10 years.
Yeah. And it showed that these kids that were in music classes received higher scores on standardized tests. These are like SAT, ACT, kind of end of high school tests, than students with little to no musical involvement. The music students scored on average 63 points higher on the verbal section.
Yes.
And 44 points higher on the math sections of the SAT than the non-music students.
So why do we have to plead our case?
Some people jump to the point where, oh, if I take clarinet lessons, then my AP calculus score is going to go from a B to an A. And that's not going to happen. But it does seem to indicate that musically educated students are often doing better in school, probably for many, many reasons that we're talking about, not just the direct brain connection, but also the confidence level, the ability to socialize, so many experiences that come out of music classes that are helping them to be better students, more engaged in school.
Well, and I think in terms of general learning, music has tons of academic components. I mean, we're talking about a subject that can be intensely physical with coordination, hand-eye coordination, all types of physical movement. emotion and creativity as vehicles for self-expression. But the biggest part that I think is important to us is the development of musical skills that can last a lifetime, regardless of a career choice or where we end up. You know, you may not necessarily be able to play tackle football at 80 years old, but you can still play piano. And my wife, Emily, teaches first grade at Pace Academy, and music is a significant part of how she and her students communicate. Sometimes it's a song to help them learn a set of words, or, you know, I think I still remember the state song in alphabetical order that we can all sing.
I didn't ever learn that one.
Alabama, well, Arkansas, that one?
Yeah, don't make me start. No, I remember
the New York City school system, not that I was a part of it, but I remember reading that they taught elementary school children, "This is the symphony that Schubert wrote and never finished."
Yeah, exactly. So we used musical lyrics to learn our own musical themes in music history class.
But
exactly.
The states, you're going to have to stay after and teach me that one, Will.
Noted. Well, and I think the other side is sometimes my wife uses music in her class just as a contrast to what she's doing to get students up, to get them moving. They dance all the time in class. And the kids love it, not just because of the freedom of being able to move, but also just it's a contrast from what may be a more sedentary activity. Not to suggest my wife teaches things that are very sedentary, but just to provide some sort of a contrast, I think is crucial, especially for young minds, but all across the spectrum.
Sure.
So I think we're waving the flag for aesthetic sensitivity and creativity and just music to teach music, but also to not ignore the fact that music education affects all of your education in a very positive way. I don't know that the number one justification is that if you take viola lessons, you'll get better test scores. But somewhere in that mix is that you're more into being a student at school. And I think that affects all of your performance in all of your academic areas.
Well, going back to the ancient Greeks again, it was the whole of education. I mean, the Olympics had cultural Olympics.
Right. Gymnasium, the quadrivium, the whole idea of mind, body, and spirit being the way that you educate a person from the very, very beginning.
Well,
and I think, a great benefit in the way we design classes and the way they're structured is students are learning the importance of an individual contribution to a team effort. Everybody has value. Everybody has importance. And sometimes that's hard to accomplish in some academic classrooms just for logistical reasons. But because we are able to give everyone a contributing role, we are able to reach students across the ability spectrum. Everyone can contribute. Everyone can be a part of the team in some way. But the best part is we can create lessons and assessments and standards that meet students where they are and at their level. Nobody can get away with the idea of I'm not very good at playing my saxophone, so I can't really contribute in band. It's absolutely not true.
And you're not going to get a concussion.
Well, that unless something goes terribly wrong.
We did have a choral student at Westminster bang his head on a piano. That was one of the rare music concussions.
On purpose?
I would hope not.
Oh, good.
Just since we're on the air, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
No, that was not the case. And we often talk about learning domains, that different people learn in different ways. Some people like to read. Some people like to listen. Some people need to touch things just to figure out what gets them learning the best. And if you think about playing a musical instrument or singing, you're involved with a cognitive, intellectual thinking component. You have always with music an affective, emotional, inside feeling aspect. And you also, even singers, have a kinesthetic, psychomotor, or moving component. So you're thinking, feeling, moving at all times. And so in some way, we're probably hitting everyone's main learning domain in some positive way.
Well, and I think when you go even further than that to the most basic thing we think of with music, our ears and how we listen, the idea of developing critical listening, critical aural discernment to be able to detect subtle differences in what we hear is crucial, not just in music, but in language development and communication skills. And to be able to discern at the micro level these types of differences, I think, goes well beyond even just musical benefit.
And you can transfer some of those other non-musical benefits, if you will, to the idea that in music, you often have to work by yourself. You have to practice your part. You're often in chamber groups or the section in your band or orchestra or choir, and you're often in a large ensemble setting. That's not unlike the workplace where you have to work by yourself, in small groups or in large groups. You also, in music, learn the difference between just kind of being okay at something, just kind of getting by, being proficient, it's all right, or really mastering something to its technical perfection or as close as you can possibly get it. You cultivate that idea that there is reward through sustained effort and practice and perseverance rather than kind of the drive-through idea of cliff notes or just kind of basically getting by in school. You can't just get by to make music sound good. So somehow in this value system that's created in the ensemble and in the music classroom, we have self-discipline, the idea of hard work and a kind of work ethic that has a reward at the end of the tunnel.
No cliff notes for a Mozart piano sonata.
It's not going to happen.
Well, and the nice part about that is we as music teachers oftentimes get to see that development of self-discipline over a four-year spectrum. We get to see these students every year, whereas we're not just teaching them in their freshman year and then they move on. We're able to see how they continue to develop. And those social benefits, I think, are huge, both for us as teachers and as students, in that some students develop a core group of friends that are a part of these music groups. I come from a band background, so I used to teach marching band, and you'd have students showing up 2 weeks before school even begins, building a core group of friends mm-hmm. that then they're in this class and extracurricular activities together all the way through their high school career, middle school and high school career. I think it's crucial.
Will Pitts and Scott Stewart are my guests on City Lights from WABE Atlanta. We'll be back in a moment.
Support for WABE comes from Fernbank Museum, presenting their new exhibit, Wild Music, an interactive opportunity to experiment with sounds in nature, explore instruments, and compose original songs. Information at fernbankmuseum.org. And from the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, presenting an all-French program featuring works by Ravel, Debussy, and Berlioz Thursday and Saturday, March 31st and April 2nd in Atlanta Symphony Hall. Tickets at atlantasymphony.org or 404-733-5000. Classical series presented by Delta Airlines.
It's 11:23. You're listening to City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes here with Scott Stewart and Will Pitts. We're talking about the importance of music education. Recent research in teen brain development seems to support what music educators have been stating, albeit anecdotally, for decades, and that's that music is good for the brain.
It is very good for the brain. The latest research that we have, and this is kind of in the 2 to 3 year old category, is indicating that the teen brain is neither an old child brain or a young adult brain. It's kind of its own thing from about 15 to 25. And it's remarkably what neuroscientists call plastic, in that it means it's primed to acquire new knowledge and skills, maybe more so at any other time than their lives.
Really?
Yeah. And so music performance appears to activate just about every area of the brain that's developed at this point. I'm pointing to my head, which is not helpful on the radio, I understand.
But I see what you mean.
You see what I'm saying. So the auditory cortex, which is right above your ears, that's the temporal lobes of the brain, are obviously involved in music. The visual cortex, which is at the back of above your neck. That's the occipital lobes. And the motor and the sensory cortices, which are kind of at the crown of your head. They map out your entire body and where movement fires from. And then, of course, the prefrontal cortex. That's the part of the brain right behind your forehead. That's the CEO, the executive function.
We hear a lot about that one.
We do. And in teenagers, we don't hear much about it.
We're wondering where it went.
It's coming. It's coming down the road. And, of course, in the middle, kind of between your ears, there's a little walnut structure called the amygdala, and that's where all your emotional processing happens. And that's also where the spiritual affective part of music gets processed, as well as smell. So it's kind of interesting that your best stored memories of childhood or events from long ago are going to be activated either by something cooking or by music, which I think is so cool.
It's marvelous.
So the old notion of your left brain being the logical, scientific side and the right brain being the artsy, emotional side are really kind of out the window.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's kind of...
I'm over that left brain, right brain.
Yeah, it's not
thing.
Really so relevant so much anymore. So music participation and listening to music fire just about every area of the brain, which has to be good for students.
Yeah.
Well, and suggesting that we have to separate those students that are more logically based or more creative based, I think doesn't help our cause, you know, that the idea should be integration. And we as teachers teach all different types of learners. We have the visual learners, the tactile learners, the aural learners, the kinesthetic learners, and some combinations of all of the above. And I think music, whether it's in an academic classroom or it's in a music classroom itself, just like Scott was pointing to, provides the most comprehensive activities to cover all of those areas and to meet all of those learners. And we have to diversify our instruction and our assessment as teachers to meet those different learners. For example, when you play a cello, you're hearing the sound come from the instrument. You're moving your arm back and forth to create friction against the strings. You're moving your left hand to change the pitch. You're hearing the sound coming from the instrument. You're feeling vibrations from the instrument. It gives us almost a sensory overload. We're covering all of the senses with one instrument, one action that we're playing.
Mm. Well, Congress passed and President Obama signed the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, specifically the 2015 compromise proposal, the Every Student Succeeds Act. Where does this position advocacy in music at?
We perceive this to be a nice step in the right direction. The No Child Left Behind Act from 2001, which unfortunately left a lot of children behind, identified music as a core subject, but it was not one they identified as worthy of testing. So it basically kind of fell off the map, and schools didn't receive funding for it. So they would divert funds to other areas, and some schools, in fact, have dropped music education programs at all levels, which I think is a travesty. What we're seeing now is that music and other performing arts have been identified as core subjects and are accessible. That's a whole new ball game. And so NAFME, which is the National Association for Music Education, has been developing on their website a whole bunch of advocacy principles based on the new Every Student Succeeds Act.
Well, and the best part of the ESSA is it continues that idea of music as a core subject, but adds a lot more language about integrating music, it isn't just about adding music classes, it's about integrating music into our core curriculum and letting that be a teaching strategy that we use. And because of that, that translates, I think, into more funding that we're going to be seeing for these music programs and finding ways to integrate music into that. But the best part is it's moving us closer to educating the whole student, finding all aspects.
You know, well, listening to you talk about that reminds me, last year we had in here Madison Cario from Georgia Tech, who knew that the scientists could feel slighted by the STEM stuff. They like the arts. Mm-hmm. And so when STEM became STEAM, and from what you're describing, it acknowledges the fact that creativity is the entire spectrum. I mean, there's just as much art in physics, although don't ask me to explain it.
Oh, it's there. And we're hearing from all disciplines words like discipline, passion, soul, creativity. These are difficult to quantify on tests. It's probably even more difficult for lawmakers and policymakers to determine a metric for those items. But in fact, what we're hearing from graduate schools and medical schools and employers is these are the characteristics they want of their employees.
Here with Scott Stewart and Will Pitts. You're listening to City Lights. We'll be back with this scintillating discussion about the importance of music education in a moment. This is WABE Atlanta.
Support for WABE comes from the Alliance Theater, presenting Born for This, the B.B. Winans Story, a new American musical with classic Winans hits and original music from six-time Grammy Award-winning icon B.B. Winans and the director of Motown the Musical comes the hilarious and heartwarming story of B.B.'s journey towards self-discovery, April 13th through May 15th. Tickets at alliancetheater.org/bornforthis. And from Clayton State Spivey Hall, presenting Bavarian soprano Christiana Karg making her North American recital debut with pianist Malcolm Martineau, Saturday, April 2nd at 7:30 p.m. More information at spiveyhall.org.
It's 11:32. You're listening to a composition by Will Pitts. Here with Will Pitts and Scott Stewart talking about the importance of music education. There's clear pressure on schools to provide as many opportunities for students to enter a competitive, technology-driven workforce, even at the high school level. So would you talk a little bit about STEAM? We were talking about STEAM earlier.
Well, STEAM, obviously standing for science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. It hasn't always included the A, as you mentioned, but I think there's a growing appreciation, as evidenced by the CSSA development, that the arts can enhance student success, not just on their own, but within these STEM subjects.
This actually came out of the Rhode Island School of Design when they were finding that the integration of art and design and music into traditional academic subjects made all of those more interesting. And so you'll go into schools and see paintings of cells and cell function and sculptures of demonstrating physics principles and Shakespearean dioramas and all kinds of ways that teachers are using music and art in their classrooms.
So what are the greatest challenges for music education now?
I think if you talk to school administrators today, you're going to hear them say tests, tests, and tests. Tests drive funding that they get for their school and create kind of a culture of test-taking at the end of every school year. We often hear that the biggest problems facing music education in schools is scheduling and funding.
Well, and I think the other side is the cultural side, that performing music is for an elite group of people. And, you know, the way music has developed into a cultural phenomenon in some ways, I think, has limited involvement outside of schools, outside of school organizations. And so I think finding ways to make music just as much a community effort as it is an educational effort is crucial to continuing the development of music education.
Good point, Scott. You just want to educate great musicians?
That's right. It's not just about churning out what some people perceive to be vocational musicians, people who will grow up to be professional musicians. In fact, that's a very small piece of that pie. We're looking for people who are lifelong learners, lifelong consumers of music, as well as great students for all of their days.
Two great teachers, Scott Stewart and Will Pitts, thank you so much. Very compelling.
It's great to be here.
Thanks,
Lois.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. This story is part of American Graduate, Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You can find this conversation and more stories on what works in education at wabe.org/advancing.